Hello, and welcome to Unconventional Wisdom About Conventional Wisdom. I'm your host, Kim Miller-Hirshon. I'm so excited today to welcome Kate Pletcher from Treehouse Partners. And let me tell you a little bit about Kate as a way of introduction. So Kate is the founder and CEO of Treehouse Partners. They are a boutique executive search firm. Prior to launching the firm, she owned and operated a successful franchised staffing firm in Los Angeles. She also served as director of global brand licensing for Skechers. She built Treehouse Partners to help her clients view their organizations with a new perspective because they're not on the ground day to day within your company. They are able to look at things differently. They specifically work with companies to fill executives into firms. First of all, welcome, Kate. And so my random question for you is, so if you are listening and you're not looking at the video, Kate happens to be wearing a beautiful green sweater today. And a little bird told me that you organized a St. Paddy's Day parade. So we are dying to know how that came about.
Oh, that is very funny. Yes, the birdie was correct. I would say professional experience. I worked all during middle school and high school, but my first really professional experience was launching a St. Patrick's Day parade in Madison, Wisconsin, where I went to undergrad. So my dad had been involved in starting the St. Patrick's Day parade in St. Paul, Minnesota, which I just marched in last week. And when I went to school, I remember St. Patrick's Day was going to be on a Tuesday. So my family was asking, hey, what are you going to do? How are you going to march in a parade if you can't just drive back for the day and you've got class and things? And I was like, I'll just start my own parade. So I did that. I started by literally taking the phone book and calling Irish people and telling them to come march with me. And before I knew it, I had some sponsors. And I remember like Bryan Brothers Ambulance. They were a couple of ambulances and a couple of bands, and a bunch of people came and showed up, and we marched down State Street that first year. But it is still a growing concern. And I think 100,000 people participate in that parade every year. And I started it, gosh, probably almost 30 years ago. Yeah, that's.
Oh my God. I love that. And we can talk about this in the context of leadership and growing your business. But I think it really just speaks to, I think, who you are, right? Give you an idea, a challenge that you can get behind. And you're like, okay, let's go. Let's just make that happen.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. It's a theme.
Yeah, exactly. Let's explore that a little bit more. Curious, when you started out your career, and you can address this in a couple different ways, like maybe what you thought work and business and success was going to look like because of the family you grew up in, the community you grew up in, or conversely, like when you started, like after college or whatever, when you started working, what was modeled for you and what you thought, okay, this is what's going to make me successful. And then later on, you're like, nope, that does not work for me.
I'll take it from, let's focus on my most recent chapter, which is a long chapter. I started my company 15 years ago, but I remember, as you mentioned in my bio, my prior job had nothing to do with recruiting, right? I was running licensing for Skechers. So to make that launch into the recruiting world, a lot of people told me that my first hire should be someone from the recruiting world. They kept saying, hey, you're going to bring that passion. People will follow you. I had graduated from Anderson, so I had my MBA and the business skills and all of that, but I didn't really know this industry that well. And so for me to really be successful, I would probably want to hire someone who had lived and breathed recruiting for a long time. I did that and it was a failure. I will tell you, since then, we're recruiting from, knock on wood, we still have never made a mistake hiring. But that first one we did because we thought we were looking at a bunch of different candidates and we said, hey, this one's going to bring that recruiting expertise. We didn't listen to our gut. Like my gut always said, you know who I want to hire? I want to hire people who were servers and bartenders when they were in college or after, because that actually skill set is harder to find. The multitasking, the customer service, the calm facade while the kitchen's literally on fire, like all of these skills that are so much harder, I deprioritized them in the beginning because I thought I needed this expert. And what actually I learned from that was that part of what made us successful as a recruiting firm was that we weren't like other recruiting firms. She had this habit of just, we posted the job and we haven't gotten any applications yet. Or it was just a very different mindset. Whereas my business partner and I, who had started the company, we treated every search as if it was our own search. And we were frantic about it. We were losing sleep over it. We were going to do everything we could to find the right person. And so, yeah, that was a short-lived hire and a very important lesson to learn at the very beginning of the firm.
Right.
Since then, if you've worked for a recruiting firm, we're probably not interested in you, candidly.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a different example, but I will bring it back. Okay. When my son was in college, he started making backpacks out of, he'd go to the Pick and Pull, which is a salvage car
okay.
yard.
I don't know the Pick and Pull.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Trust me, I didn't either. But,
okay.
And he would go there and he would cut out leather and vinyl seats
cool.
and then seat belts, right?
Huh.
And then he started making these backpacks out of them, right?
Cool.
Patchworky, and then he used the seatbelt clasp as
the strap.
And also the
Oh,
clasp
the clasp, yes.
To hold
cool.
the flap down.
Yeah, cool.
And so I sew, right? So I'm a sewer. And he said to me at one point, will you teach me how to sew? And I said, no, because how you are figuring out how to construct this is not how you would do it. If you know how to sew, it's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
And you are coming up with the most innovative, like interesting ways of solving these like construction problems.
Yeah.
So actually keep doing what you're doing. And no, I'm not going to teach you how to sew.
That's great. Yeah.
But I do think that it's one thing to say, we do things differently. It's a very different thing to be able to define what differentiates you, right?
Yeah. Sometimes you don't know it until you see an example like that, or a
That's
client
right.
tells you, thank you, this was so different. You just can't put your finger on it until you see
Right.
what you are not.
I would agree. And I would say two things about it. First of all, you don't know what you don't know, right? So if you didn't come from the recruiting business and you figured out a way to do it that makes sense, you know, what's really interesting. I literally just met with another coach who does something similar to what I do. I work more with executives. She works more with like first-time managers.
Got it.
You know what she said? And I just thought that it was so clear and so brilliant. She said, we create programs for first-time managers that we wish we had.
Oh, wow. That's good.
And I was like,
yeah, everyone has one of those.
That's
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
like,
good.
I would have been so much more effective, so much better. My learning curve would have been
Yes.
so much shorter.
That's good.
And so now they're teaching people that. I was like, that's phenomenal. Yeah. So I think, yeah, so I'm really impressed, Kate, that you can really very clearly articulate what makes you different. And I think what helps is that then you attract clients that want that kind of service, right? They want
You've
that,
had
right?
that pain before. Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
Which I think is also really helpful because, like you said, on the one hand, a recruiter, somebody with a lot of recruiting experience who like knows how to do it the right way is probably not the right employee for you. Can, or maybe on the same page, a company did has the expectation of a very traditional
Only going to
recruiting
be this way. Yeah.
that's also not your client, right?
That's right. That's
Yeah.
right.
So the clearer you can be, the more you attract who's a good fit for you.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that. All right. 15 years, you have really grown this company. I can tell you it's quite successful. Oh, and you know what else too? Although I'm going back, just for our listening audience, Kate said the Anderson School. She got her MBA from the Anderson School. That's at UCLA, just University of California at Los Angeles. So just,
Sorry, yes,
yeah, I just
helpful.
popped back into my head. All
Yep.
right. So as a successful leader, what's one thing that people just assume that you have figured out? And inside, it's something that you still wrestle with.
Okay, I'm going to take it a little broader. I think there's a lot of people because I have, you know, this, I have two kids. I have a lot of volunteer things that I do. I have hobbies and I travel and things like that. And people are constantly saying, "How do you do it all?" They're just like, it's like the common thing, the super mom, and you have a business. Oh. And I think the thing I would want them to know, and I try to tell people this all the time, is that I don't do it all. First of all, I have a lot of support. But second of all, I fail all the time and things fall through the cracks. I am just pretty careful about deciding which things I'm okay letting fall through the cracks. And actually, it kind of makes me think of something that you taught me a long time ago. The first time I met you, I think, was in San Francisco, and you were giving guidance to executives on how to be better organized, how to just not let the clutter of life affect your day job, basically. And I had asked you, if I recall, and you may not remember this because it was a long time ago, I think I raised my hand and said, "Hey, I've got a notoriously cluttered inbox." And at the time, like I said, we hire great employees. My right hand has been with me forever, 13 years, something 12, 13 years. She has zero emails in her inbox at the end of the day. That is her thing. My husband, same way. Almost all of my employees, same way. Mine is insane. It's disgusting. It's like you scroll. I have flags in different colors, blah, blah, blah. And you said something very enlightening, which was maybe that's fine. And it really stuck with me because it made me just be like, it's okay. And guess what? Someone who asked me for a favor, who I met once at a conference 10 years ago, emailed me and I didn't get back to them in 24 hours. In fact, it took a week and a half. Or they emailed me again and then I got back to them. It's fine because none of my clients are gonna get through the cracks and nothing that's important with my family or my friends is gonna slip through the cracks. So I get 300 emails a day, maybe more. Some of them are gonna slip through the cracks. And if it's really important, they'll track me down or they'll call Diana or they'll figure it out. So email is one example, but I would say in life, there's a whole bunch of those things. Like I don't contribute always to the bake sale, but I'll go sell $20,000 in banners for the school, and that's okay. And that's just a way of proceeding and being able to look like you're handling it all, but you're really, yeah, you're letting a lot of things
Right.
slide.
And I think you bring up such an important point, which is permission to say no, permission to say, I don't have the bandwidth for this. I think oftentimes we don't do that until we crash and burn. So to do it as a regular practice of, I can't do everything all the time. And so it's, so we take away the expectation, right? That's what gets in the way.
The
Right.
guilt that comes with it. The, yeah, totally.
I'm going to actually give a really quick little tip here for anybody who has younger kids. I have a client that I'm working with right now who has this super woman complex. And I think it's very challenging
Yeah.
for two reasons. One, it's because it's how you got where you are, right? Is
Yeah.
that incredible? Oh, wait,
We
I
can
need
do
a St. Patty's Day parade to go to. Oh, okay, I'll just organize one. And it is fundamentally who you are. And then I think there's the other of, gosh, I have this business that I'm in charge of. I also need to show up for my kids. I
Yeah.
need to do all the things and whatever your story around that is. And you know
Yeah.
what's really interesting? What I said to this client, which hopefully would be helpful for somebody who's listening, is here's what I'd love for you to do. I'd actually love for you, now the child has to be old enough to have this conversation with you, but these are the amount of things that you have this week, right? Different activities, classroom, whatever it is. I can go to two of those things. Let's sit down and talk
Yes,
about
totally.
what is important to you. And here's the really incredible thing. Then the guilt is gone because your child, and also too, what are you teaching, right? We have this like crazy idea that we are supposed to be able to do everything.
It's
Like, what
insane.
a gift to be able to give to your child that expectation and ability to think through and reason,
Prioritize,
prioritize, right? I think it's so important. And I think it takes the other thing is too, is that if you train your child to expect you to show up for every single thing, then when you don't, they are very like,
devastated,
that's right, they're devastated. And
right.
here's the interesting thing. You set that up, right? Like you did. That actually, it was not a reasonable expectation. So why not preempt that by really giving your kids, setting them up for the skills to prioritize? Because that is not something we were ever taught. It's something we had to learn, but we weren't taught how to do it.
No, that's really good advice.
Yeah, there you go. Every so often.
All the time, Kim.
All right. If you could rewrite the rule book on leadership, what's one outdated belief that you'd throw away and what would you replace it with?
Okay, I'm going to say, first of all, I think the good news is that a lot of it is being rewritten. People, maybe it was COVID, it was something. Maybe it was the next generation's coming up, but people are thinking about leadership in different ways. I guess if I were to pick one, I remember learning, I don't know from where or from who, but this idea of never let them see you sweat. In There's some truth in it. There's something good there, and I've definitely had situations where fake it till you make it. But the idea of never let them see you sweat has never really worked for me. And I think I look back at that parade. I look at leadership positions I've been in other organizations. Certainly now, I need to bring people in when I'm sweating and get help and be vulnerable. That doesn't mean you stand in front of the company and say, I'm freaking out, guys. It's not that at all. And it's probably not everyone in the company, but having people that you can say, hey, I'm struggling here. What do we do now? Can you help me navigate this? Here's what I've tried. I'm nervous. Are you feeling nervous? What can we do? Do you think the team's feeling nervous? Being able to talk about that, be a little vulnerable, because especially that inner circle, they have great ideas. They can help you navigate this. It's this whole idea of it's lonely at the top. It's truly lonely at the top, unless you welcome people in and ask for their advice and get help. And it could be people on your team, it could be trusted advisors, it could be a peer advisory group, whoever it is. You have to let people know you're sweating so they can help you figure out where the thermostat is and turn it down and get you an ice tea or whatever it might be. So that would probably be one that I think is pretty outdated and just doesn't get you anywhere.
I think the other thing that, because listener, you know that Kate and I know each other. I don't always know my guests, but I know Kate. And I would say that the other thing that occurs to me is this really jumping off point of growing your company and then stepping into more of a CEO role where you're not doing
Right.
and you're leading and maybe doing business development or
Yeah.
other things that the business needs. And I remember you and I having a conversation about, wait a second, Kate, why do you need to be involved in that phone call? Like
Yeah.
your schedule was just nutso bananas, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that is one of the hardest, like aside from just getting clients in the beginning and getting everything set up, because
Doing everything in the beginning. Yeah.
that's a very heavy lift, right?
Yeah.
But I think getting your business to the point where the thing is that we don't often do it until, again, we're at a breaking point.
Yeah. Something's got to give. Yeah.
Yeah, something's got to
Yeah.
give. And
Yeah.
I do think looking at that, and you know how I like to say it is, what is your new job description? What is it that you bring to the business, which is your unique value that nobody, like, that is not replaceable? And then it's also, and this is sometimes the hardest part, which is, and then it's really trusting the people
People
to
and the
do,
robots, the AI, yes, but the
yeah.
people, yeah.
To do the screening or to do the interviews or to have the, like, whatever the roles are, right?
Yeah.
There are some things you're like, okay, yeah, no, I'm not going to, clearly I'm not going to do that. But at, I think what's harder is sometimes to give away some of the high level tasks.
Right. Or the stuff that you're good at, you're really good at and you kind of like doing. But it's true. Yeah, that's when stuff starts to get really interesting, is if you can actually replicate some of that in someone else.
Right. And then I think the second part of it is understanding that at least to in the beginning, it may not go as quickly as you could do it. It may get derailed a little bit. You're not going to get perfect outcomes all the time, although you certainly strive to, there's a learning curve. I'm actually having somebody on my team do something right now that's taking a very long time. And that just has to be okay. Because
Yeah.
it is getting into the weeds for me. And
Right.
you can't hire somebody to manage something and then manage it.
And how are they going to learn if they
That's
don't go
right.
through it? Yeah,
And
totally.
yeah, it was funny. I was reflecting today. I think I probably could do a better job of managing the manager, right? So I think that's something I need to look at. But I think I'm just going to step in and get this done because I can get it done faster is not the
Never
right
resist.
answer.
Have to resist the temptation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So what's one unconventional habit or mindset shift that's helped you grow your business?
Good one. Okay. I'll go back to UCLA Anderson. When you're in business school, everyone tells you, and I would say the same is true in like networking groups and things like that. Everyone tells you to pretty much go narrow and deep. Pick a lane, pick a focus. Don't go boil the ocean. Don't try to eat the elephant. Whatever phrase you want to use, they say become an expert here. And at first, I felt a little bit like I needed to do that. When I started my company, I thought, oh gosh, I've done a lot in marketing and sales. Maybe we just do that in terms of the roles we're recruiting for. But then an early client was like, can you find us a CFO? And I was like, yeah, we definitely can. And pretty quickly, I realized not only were we capable of doing a broader set of searches, but we were actually incapable of being narrow. And whether you, I don't know if it's like ADHD or we got bored when we were working on too many searches that were too similar. It wasn't interesting. We weren't passionate about what we were doing. We found the candidate pool to be stale. And so what we ended up, we flipped the script a little bit and said, we're going to be experts at the human part. Like, who are the people in this company? What's weird about them? What's awesome about them? What are the unique benefits or drawbacks of the company? We're going to figure out the culture piece really well. And once we know that, and if we do the same thing on the candidate side, we get to know what's quirky about this person. We'll be those kind of matchmakers because the other piece actually isn't that tough. Matching up a skill set on a job description to did someone do that in their resume? That's where the robots come into play.
Right.
But the human piece is the key. And so thank God we did that because in the end, when, COVID hit, for example, our hospitality and restaurant clients obviously did not do well. But because we were super diverse, we had e-com clients, we had fashion, we had CPG, we had, and by fashion, I mean, we had clients who sold the best cheap sweatpants out there. So we had this diversity of clients, these diversity of searches we were working on, and that allowed us to navigate that. We started basically in a recession in 2010. We have been able to navigate these times where, gosh, if we were just doing accounting and finance searches in the furniture industry or something like that, you just don't have the ability to pivot throughout. So that would probably be the thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, and I think what I love what you said about that, and I stumbled through the introduction when I said this, but I think it does really strike me as different, and maybe I pick up on it because I just it so resonates with me. The thing about we're going to get to know you as a company, right? So that and the candidate, right? So that we're matching really good fits, right? Good cultural fits. And also love that you also get, first of all, you're just making people happy, right? And we spend so much time at work that to have a place where you really love to be is a big thing. And
Awesome.
I think the second part of it really just is that I don't know if they still do this. I recall somebody telling me a while ago, if you didn't have a college degree, you couldn't even pass the screening at Google, right? They had all of these very
Hard, fast rules.
rules that really had nothing to do with job performance. And maybe they've stopped doing that at this point. I'm not really sure. But especially, right, because so many programmers are self-taught that and even if you're not in the technical part, I think when we prejudge what things have to be and need to be, we miss out on some very special matches and special people.
And I'm going to say, Kim, it's also, I know DNI is tricky, DEI, whatever it's being called now, but there's entire buckets of people who didn't have the same opportunities as other buckets of people. And you're really missing out, whether it's gender or ethnicity or region of the country, or there's so many ways that people just didn't have, the same access, and that you're missing out on an entire incredible pool of people if you're so focused in on what, a job description that was spit out by probably AI said you should be
Right.
looking for. So I totally agree. I also think it's important to remember that of the whatever 1,000+ people we've placed, more than that, probably a couple thousand people, not every one of them, in fact, most of them would not be right for my company. So there's a subtlety there, which is that all kinds of people are great in all kinds of ways, but to be able to find, and by the way, I wouldn't want to work at many of our clients. Not you, client who's listening. You, I would definitely work with forever. Anyway, but it's the matchmaking, right? Who
Right.
is this person who is right for these people right now, at this phase, at this stage? That is the difference. And it really ends up being a longer term fit, more impact, more quickly, everyone's happier in the end, even though they may not be your and my people.
That's right. Exactly. Oh my God. So well said. All right. Okay. So last question is a two-parter. So in this sort of phase of your life and phase of your business, if you're going to feel imposter syndrome, what, that sort of trigger, that lack of confidence, what is likely to trigger that for you? And then the second thing is, what do you do to get yourself back
It's
to
a good one.
center? Yeah.
Okay, I deal with it a lot. I don't, luckily, I don't deal with it when I'm in the core of our business. When we're doing recruiting, I feel like we have a seat at that table for a reason. We've been doing it for a long time. We have many happy clients. So actually in the day-to-day of Treehouse, I don't really have it. When I have it is usually when I get called in to speak. Sometimes when I'm on a podcast, when I'm teaching a class, I'm like a guest lecturer. It's, wait, this guy you want? Okay. I remember as I was coming up, you hear from or see the people who are the wise ones giving the guidance and having the perspective and the sage. And they're typically older. They've had decades in their field. They're renowned. And then the way, I guess, to the second part of the question, the way I deal with it is, first of all, I realize I'm old. I'm there. I have the gray hairs.
How did that happen?
I'm like the wise one now. Like I've been doing this for a long time. And I'm not joking. I literally sometimes pull up my LinkedIn and look like, oh, yeah, like I look pretty legit. I can see why they might be interested in that perspective. But it does take, because I feel like I'm that girl in Madison, like starting a parade. Just what do I know? And yet I've had this entire career and people want to get guidance from me, right? And so it's really more in those moments of outside the core of my day-to-day running Treehouse, when I'm asked to be like an expert, I have to remind myself that I'm an expert. I am the expert.
Yeah, I actually love the idea of looking at your own like LinkedIn profile. I know it sounds funny, but I have a client who we just recently, they have a tendency to catastrophize, especially when interactions or outcomes are unknown. And when they have a evidence of something going well, I was like, you actually need to write that
Write
down.
it down. Good.
And you
Yeah.
need to keep a file
Oh my
of,
gosh. Kim,
right?
I have a perfect example. When you take your kids to go get their vaccines, right? They're always just like the COVID shot or the flu shot, whatever. It's oh, the buildup, it's terrifying. They're going to run away from you. We started taking video of them after the shot and then showing them as we're heading to the doctor. Remember last year, okay? Look at, here's a video of you saying it's not that big of a deal. But they don't remember because the fear in
Right.
that moment is all they can think about. And it's like that person does look like me. I'm not sure that I said that. I said I was okay. All right. And I'm getting an ice cream cone again this year after. Okay. So yes, totally. Write it down, document it. That's good.
Oh my God, I love that. I'm going to steal that.
You can have
I am 100% going to steal that. Oh my God, that's the best. That is the best. I love that. Kate, thank you so much.
Oh, this was fun.
Yeah,
Thank
this was
you.
a really fun conversation. Again, Kate Pletcher, Treehouse Partners. Her info will be in the show notes in case anybody has a company and needs a really incredible team to find them executives.
Awesome.
And I am Kim Miller-Hirshon, Kim Miller-Hirshon Coaching and Consulting, and I have two quick asks for you. One is subscribe to our newsletter. Comes out once a week. It's really brief. It's just got one idea in it and one thing for you to practice and do. We've gotten good feedback on it, so subscribe. And the second thing is that we're doing some free webinars to talk about leadership and to get to know you. And there'll be time in it where you'll get to ask your questions. So we're going to give away a lot of good advice and deal with your questions. So if you want to do that, you can sign up below. So Kim Miller-Hirshon, Kim Miller-Hirshon Coaching and Consulting, you've been listening to Unconventional Wisdom about conventional wisdom. Go out there and be a better human.